Hey, it's Craig. I just wanted to let you know that you can listen to Canadian History X early and ad-free on Amazon Music, included with Prime. Greetings and welcome to another episode of Canadian History X. If you like, you can support the podcast for as little as $3 a month. Just go to patreon.com/CanadaEHX. You can also donate to the podcast by going to CanadaEHX.com and clicking Donate. Don't forget, I have three other podcasts out there, From John to Justin, which releases every single Friday, Canada's Great War, which releases every single Sunday, and Coast to Coast, every single Thursday. If you want, you can email me at craig@canadaehx.com. You can find me on Twitter. My handle is Craig Baird, CraigBaird, and I'm on Instagram at Bairdo37. Today I'm speaking with Genevieve Graham, the author of Letters from Across the Sea. We talk about her great nonfiction book, her writing process, and what's coming next. So I hope you enjoy it. Let's get to it.
I guess, how have you been doing over the course of the past year with COVID? I mean, Atlantic Canada is certainly doing much better than the rest of Canada when it comes to COVID.
You know, Nova Scotia, somehow we managed very, very well. We still are managing very, very well. It's amazing. I guess we're all just interested here. It's perfectly fine for me. I'm used to being all by myself at my desk, so it hasn't really affected me. The only thing that's affected me with COVID really is that I've learned how to put myself in front of a camera like I never did before, because speaking to people like you and speaking to book clubs and all sorts of stuff via Zoom has changed everything for me. But other than that, we're all good.
Same here. Not much has changed. I guess it's that introvert aspect. You stay home anyways, so what's the difference? So Letters Across the Sea, it's the book, and it's kind of set in two different years, 1933 and 1939. Tell me a bit about how the process came about to write this book.
Well, I'm writing exclusively Canadian historical fiction. I started zeroing in on Canadian history because I've always been a historical fiction reader and lover, but I've only ever read stuff. I mean, there's some Canadian historical fiction, but most of it's set in Europe or the States or England, Scotland, all these places, but so little here. And I started digging into more and more Canadian history. And this is actually my sixth novel of Canadian history. This one I've been wanting to write for a little while because I like to write about events that we don't talk about, things we're sort of forgetting about over time. It's not being taught sometimes. And the beginning of this story was supposed to be all about the greatest ethnic riot in Canadian history, the Christie Pitts riot. That's how it all started. So that was back in 1933. Mm-hmm. And that's an amazing story in itself, but then it led into World War II, because one of my main characters, Max, is actually Jewish. He's a doctor, and he is bent on going to World War II and fighting for all of our freedoms. It was after that that I like to write about Canadian military, and mostly because I feel that our military are very underappreciated, under-acknowledged mm-hmm. for the things that they've done. In the last book that I wrote, I talked about the invasion of Sicily, where everyone talks about the Brits and the Americans, but we were wedged right in the middle there, and we did a lot of things too that people don't normally talk about. So with this one, I wanted to write about a part of the war that I knew nothing about. I wanted to write about the Pacific Theater, which I'm not really a historian, which is why I do all of this. I know very little, so I have to dig. Mm-hmm. And when I dug into this one, I started to learn about the Pacific, and then I wanted to know about Canadians. And lo and behold, there was the Battle of Hong Kong that we know next to nothing about mm-hmm. and we should know about. And then I was off to the races after that.
I'm pretty familiar with the Battle of Hong Kong, just because I have a Newfoundland dog. And so there's a dog that was in that battle called Gander. So that's why I know about that battle, because of my own dog that looks surprisingly like Sergeant Gander.
Surprisingly, do you know that his name is now listed at the Canadian War Museum in Ottawa?
I didn't know. I knew it was on a memorial, but I didn't know it was at the museum. And I think there's a statue of him as well, but it's just such a lovely story. I mean, it didn't end well, but everything else about it, I really liked.
You know what? He died a hero. So it's
exactly. Yeah. That's what matters. You know, you're preaching to the choir when you say that, you know, there's not a lot of Canadian historical fiction out there, and there should be, because we have a fascinating history. Why don't we have a more historical fiction about Canada, do you feel?
You know, who knows? Is it because we apologize for everything? I mean, I grew up learning about the Plains of Abraham, the War of 1812, mm-hmm. the basics like that. And I'm going to be perfectly honest and tell you that I slept through most of it. It was sort of taught in a way, nothing. And I think maybe that was done a lot. We talked a lot about mm-hmm. British history and American history and stuff, and not so much about our own. I think for me, it just took a long time to realize that we are living in a country that is full of history, and it is exciting history. And the more I write about it, the more I want to write about it. And it's kind of contagious once you start reading about these things and sharing it with people, like writing about the Klondike Gold Rush. Oh my goodness, adventure plus, and it was all done here. So, mm-hmm. And when you write about Canadian military history, it's fascinating. And I don't know why we don't talk more about ourselves. It must be that sorry attitude.
Yeah, we don't want to stand out for some reason, but we have such a wonderful history. So when you're writing something like this, when you're doing historical fiction, do you kind of have an idea of like, this is the story I want to tell, or do you find an event and then you look at structure and the story around the event?
That's more how I do it. I think of it as I'm starting with a black and white photo. The foundation of the book is built on a faraway, distant, long ago story that nobody really talks about. That's my black and white photo. And then when I start to research it more, I think it's sort of like colorizing the photo, bringing in the details and starting to see those people come alive. And once I know enough about what the people were really like, you know, the little intimate things about what they ate and their attitudes and all the little tiny mm-hmm. things, then you can start to really visualize the characters and become a part of the story. And that's when it sort of works out. I sort of know the plot, sort of, but I you can ask my editor, I'm never for sure on what I'm doing.
So. I always have a lot of respect for people who write historical fiction, just because I mean, I like all forms of fiction, but if you write science fiction, you can be like, well, I can make up whatever I want, you know, I'm making this world. But with historical fiction, you have to spent so much time researching with people like, say, Edward Rutherford, who writes those really long, detailed, century-spanning histories. I really enjoy those. But do you find like most of your time is spent writing the story or doing the research so you're getting the facts right?
For me, it's about 50-50. Mm-hmm. And a lot of it I do up front, but most of it I do it while I'm writing. So the more I get to know the characters, the more I get to understand what they need. And so I'm always digging. And I go off track a lot. I dive down so many rabbit holes that never appear in the book, but it still all contributes to what I'm learning. So mm-hmm. I find the whole, my history teacher would never believe it of me, but I'm loving learning the actual research, you know, what's going on with it. I really, really enjoy it. And sometimes I find the research easier than writing the plot. Sometimes my characters are less easy to work with than the history itself.
Now you mentioned this was your sixth book. Tell me about some of the other books that you've written and the historical events that you've kind of looked at with those books.
Sure. Well, it all started for me, the Canadian historical fiction started for me when I moved out here to Nova Scotia with my family. And I grew up in Toronto and then I lived about 18 years in Calgary. And then I moved out here to Halifax, or to the Eastern Shore, first of all. And it was the first time that I was actually surrounded by history that I could feel. Like there were houses down the highway from me that were over 100 years old and abandoned. So many stories inside those walls and so many graveyards that are set up, generations of families all living in the same area. You know, there's just such juicy stories in there. But what happened to me was that I had never heard of the Halifax explosion till I moved out here. And the people out here, of course, were shocked and, you know, oh my goodness, you mustn't learn about the Halifax explosion. But anybody west of here, most people west of here that I asked had no idea what it was. Mm-hmm. And I thought, well, that's just wrong. This was the largest man-made explosion of all time until Hiroshima. And we don't know that it happened right here. That's wrong. So the first book that I wrote was called Tides of Honor. And it's about the Halifax explosion and the Nova Scotia experience during World War I. And then I wrote a follow-up to that one 25 years later, the same area, the same family, but during World War II. when there were German U-boats skulking around our shores, spying on our ships and reporting on the traffic going in and out. That one I studied the Navy, the Army, and the Merchant Marine to study all about those things. I wrote about the Acadian expulsion of 1755, and that one is called Promises to Keep. That was an amazing story. That one was difficult enough writing the actual history, and then to try and find a fictional story to put in it was hard because the Acadian expulsion is massive. And again, it's something that we should know about. And then the first time that I ventured out of the Maritimes for these, I wrote, I wanted to write about the Mounties because they are, as you probably know, the number one most recognized symbol of Canada worldwide. And I wanted to know why, what they'd done to deserve this kind of, you know, regard and bravery and steadfastness, and who were these guys. But I didn't want to write sort of a chronological story starting from the beginning to the end kind of a thing. I wanted to find the right vehicle to show where the men came from. And it came out when I discovered the Klondike Gold Rush. And I thought, first of all, I thought that's Canada. And I didn't know that was here. And it probably wouldn't have been Canadian if not for the Mounties. So that story really blew it wide open for me about where the bravery comes from. Like, these men did amazing things, working in minus 60 degrees in blizzards that would bury a tent in hours and paid a dollar a day. And they were amazing. And the things that they, the rules that they put down, that they imposed and then they enforced, just saved tens of thousands of lives. It's amazing. And last year when I came out with, I came out with a story that really touched a lot of people. I had run across a story that blew me away about the British home children, which I'd never heard of. And people around me didn't really know much about. They thought I meant the guest children, which were the children sent out of England to keep them safe during World War II. But the British home children were actually, it's the story of between 1869 and 1948. Of over 120,000 destitute children sent from England to Canada to work as indentured servants, 75% of whom were neglected, abused, even killed by the Canadians over here. It's a story that wasn't really told for forever because I believe it's because most of the kids were made to feel so humiliated and ashamed of their own lives that they never told anybody. But now, with all the research that's happening, we discovered that it has affected over 12% of Canadian population is descended from those children. So over 4 million people descended from the British home children, and very few know anything about it. That book was The Forgotten Home Child, and it did really, really well, actually. It was a runaway, it was an instant number one bestseller across Canada, and it was on the bestsellers list for 19 weeks, and it was number one for 11 of those weeks. And as great as that is for me, it's also great because it tells me that people want to learn our history. You know, they're starting to wake up to it and go, oh, that's something I wish I'd known. Why didn't I know this? And they start to pick up the other books and learn more about things that really we should know about.
Absolutely. Now tell me, with Letters Across the Sea, like you said, with Forgotten Home Child, you wanted people to kind of learn about that part of our history that most people don't know. With Letters Across the Sea, what do you hope people get out of the book?
There's two aspects, as we mentioned, that the first part with the Christy Pitts riot. I want to open people's minds and eyes to the anti-Semitism that was rampant in Toronto at the time. You know, in Toronto, the good ran under the strict hand of the Orange Men. Everything was very strict and according to so many rules. But beneath it all was just an amazing simmering pot of anti-Semitism with the signs in the windows that said, help wanted, Jews need not apply. And the signs down on the beaches that said, no dogs or Jews. Mm-hmm. And the swastika clubs that were so-called cleaning up the streets by beating up Jewish people. And of course the Jewish people having their own gangs and the heat that was building up between all these, because we like to, I think as Canadians, we don't think that we are part of that dark and evil side, but I think anti-Semitism needs to be talked about more, especially here in Canada. And the other one is definitely the Hong Kong experience, that we know very little about these men, the 1985 men that were sent over to Hong Kong, that were undertrained, underarmed, told that, don't worry, nobody's going to attack you. You're just garrison duty there in Hong Kong. No, you're not in any danger at all. And then after Pearl Harbor, when the Japanese swept in and declared themselves to be definitely a part of this war, how the Canadians battled them, battled against 50,000 Japanese warriors in Bushido Code that knew no such thing as surrender. And mm-hmm. these men fought back really, really hard. But in the end, this was the only battle in World War II history that was 100% a failure. Because if you weren't one of the 296 killed during the battle, you were taken as a Japanese POW for almost 4 years, where mm-hmm. they were enslaved, they were worked in slave labor and starved and died. The brutality of it all, because there was absolutely no acknowledgement of the Geneva Convention, the emperor never signed for that. So, I mean, these men witnessed their friends being beheaded. There were mm-hmm. amazing things. And then when they came back here, they were not acknowledged. They were not compensated. There was no apology. In 1952, Canada legally absolved Japan of any financial responsibility. And there was never an apology made to the Canadian POWs until, I think it was 2011, so mm-hmm. 16 years later. And I think the experience of these men being in the POWs, there's a fact that blows me away. It shows how little we know, that about 40% of POWs that were in the German camps, about 4% of them died while they were in those camps. In mm-hmm. the Japanese camps, it was about 27% of the prisoners were killed there. I just think that these are such important facts. And when you think about the men that came back and nobody even really paid much attention to them. Everybody's mind was on either the thousands, tens of thousands of people coming back from Europe, or on the atomic bombs. Mm-hmm. And these returning Canadian POWs were just kind of lost along the way. And there's only five of them still alive today. And I think it's important that we recognize them.
For sure, absolutely. So what is coming next? What book are you going to be working on next now that you've finished this one?
I have a book a year, so I'm well into the next one. It's going to be really fun. It's evolving as it goes, but it's mostly going to be about rum running in the Windsor, Ontario, Windsor, Detroit, kind of in there. But it's going to start in World War I, where I'm going to talk about the Bluebirds, the Canadian nursing sisters. Mm-hmm. In World War I, that was the only job that the Canadian women were allowed to have in the war overseas. And actually, they were the first women to ever vote in Canada. The Bluebirds got the first vote. Mm-hmm. And so I start over there, and I go through the Spanish flu, a little bit of it. Oh. And I go through a lot of the things that were happening during that time period. And then I move out into Windsor, which, you know, it's kind of a Peaky Blinder setup out there. It was pretty wild and crazy.
Absolutely. And then with this book, with Letters Across the Sea, where can people find it? Where can they get in touch with you, learn more about the book, all of that?
You can definitely look me up anytime. My website is www.genevievegraham.com. You can find me on Simon & Schuster Canada's website. The books are available across Canada and the US as well. You can find them in chapters, you can find them online, or you can go into your independent bookstore and order mm-hmm. it straight from there.
I hope you enjoyed that interview, and if you did, please leave a rating and review. If you like, you can reach me through email at craig@canadaehx.com. You can also visit my website. You will find hundreds of articles on Canada's history, as well as all my podcast episodes. Just go to canadaehx.com. And don't forget, you can support the podcast through Patreon. There are multiple tiers to choose from, all with great benefits. You can support the podcast for as little as $3 a month, just like all of these wonderful patrons have, and I apologize if I mispronounce any names. Randy Hayden, Doug Campbell, Reg W, Deborah Carlson, Francis Helbling, Randall McCallum, Diane Wade, Lorianne Kirby, Gary Dolovich, Nick Zinri, Shannon Marshall, Clinton Martinez, Dimitri Chauve, Aaron O'Hara Myers, Robert Dunseith, Todd Casey, Catherine Roy, Luke S., JP Bear, Jason Hall, Phil Maynard, and Iris Gray. If you want, you can find me on Facebook. Just go to facebook.com/CanadianHistoryX. You can find me on Twitter. My handle is Craig Baird, CraigBaird. And you can find me on Instagram. Just go to Bairdo37. Thanks. We'll see you again next time.
Hi, it's Shauna, and I might be a bad parent because my kids think french fries are vegetables.
Hey, it's Ryan, and I might be a bad parent because I went out for wings when my wife was in the hospital after giving birth.
Johnny here. I might be a bad parent because in my house, the tooth fairy gives pocket change.
But we're not alone. Len emailed us and said his six-year-old daughter's Tarzan moment going from love seat to lazy boy by curtains made him more proud than any dance recital.
And Andy left his two-year-old at the rink.
All right, guys, I'm sure we're not alone. Like Andy's kid.
For stories and confessions like this, make sure you check out our podcast.
It's called Bad Parents, and it's available wherever you get your podcasts.
I left a glove at the rink.